today's guest is Terry Bond. Terry is running for Congress, and Terry has experienced some very unusual events with the San Francisco Elections Department. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks a lot, Maurice.
Terry, for the audience out there, give us a little history. How did this whole thing, you decided to run for...
Well, I decided, basically, when Nancy Pelosi voted for the Patriot Act, I decided somebody had to challenge her.
The Patriot Act,
removes a lot of our constitutional protections of our civil liberties. With the Patriot Act, we're no longer presumed innocent. If we can be labeled a terrorist, we're presumed guilty, and any kind of search can be made of any part of our records or life without us even knowing it.
Interesting. And
so I was outraged by that, because I've never liked Pelosi. I've never felt that she really represented San Francisco. She's a party hack. Before she was elected, she was a fundraiser for the Democrats, and that's what she still is. And I feel that we're relatively enlightened community. And we deserve enlightened representation.
I agree with that. My understanding is that you suddenly discovered San Francisco's elections department, and maybe you can shine some lights on this.
I became active in the Green Party, and they really empowered me to run for Congress. And particularly Susan King, who is now a candidate in District 5 for supervisor, she really encouraged me to do it, because I felt so strongly about Pelosi. And so I went to register as a candidate for the primary, and California has a lot of wacky rules around elections. In fact, you find this out when you get involved in running, all the complex law codes around elections. And one of these laws forced me to be a write-in candidate in the primary rather than have my name on the ballot.
Why was that?
Okay. In California, only in California, you have to have been registered in your current party to run in the primary, I think 3 months before you sign up to be in the primary. However, you cannot have been registered in another party in the 2 years before the general election. And I had switched parties to vote in a primary. I switched for Harry Britt. I switched from Green to Democrat to vote for Britt in the assembly race when Britt and Leno were contesting it. And then I switched back to Green. But because I had made that switch to Democrat, I could not be on the ballot as a Green in the primary. Okay, so I'm forced to be a write-in. Then California has another law which says that if you are a write-in in the primary, your party's primary, you must get the number of write-in votes that is equivalent to 1% of the total vote for that office in the last general election. So in 2002, 160,500 people voted for Congress in Congressional District 8, which is most of San Francisco. So I had to get 1,605 write-in votes. Now, this wouldn't have been that hard if I was a Democrat, and it would have been a little harder if I was a Republican, but because I'm a Green, I only had 12,000 voters in the whole district to get it from. It's not easy at all to get write-in votes in a low turnout primary. It's very difficult to get write-in votes. So, in fact, this law has been very effective in keeping third parties from getting a write-in candidate on the ballot, because nobody had been able to do it since 1968, when Huey Newton and Eldridge Cleaver were running in Oakland on the Peace and Freedom platform.
So basically, it's still the same old duplicity.
Yeah.
The two-party system.
Right, exactly. This is one of many laws to keep out people who are in smaller parties. So anyhow, I worked real hard at this, and I had a very effective campaign. And also, I think that people are dissatisfied with Pelosi. So the Department of Elections called me and said, congratulations, you've received...
Our San Francisco Department of Elections.
Yes, John Arntz.
John Arntz.
Yes.
I've heard that name
the
before.
The Director of Elections.
Can I interrupt for a second? I would like to welcome Kevin Lutton. She's here. And hi, Kevin. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know John Arntz, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about our San Francisco Elections Department. Didn't they attempt to try some sailing at one stage?
Well, not the actual people, but the ballot boxes, yes.
Right. I seem to remember something off of one of our peers.
Yeah.
Maybe they were getting ready for America's Cup.
Possibly, yeah.
Sure.
There should be, probably California and Florida could have a cup of a sailing ballot box competition.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's complicated, actually. I hope people are following it. Anyhow, so Arntz phoned me and said, congratulations, you've got enough votes.
The 1,659
votes. I needed
1,605.
Yeah.
Right.
So we were very excited, and the Examiner did a story about it, because it was a historic victory, really.
Sure.
And, I mean, nobody since 68 had been able to do it. And, fortunately, we had a victory party right away, because a week later, Arntz called me up and said that he had changed his mind.
Wait a minute.
What?
No,
he didn't say he changed his mind. He said he wasn't allowed to count ballots where people had written my name in but had not connected the arrow next to my name. So he was decertifying 229 of my votes.
You mean just a little line?
Right. You know, there's an arrow, the head and tail of the arrow with a gap in the middle.
This has, I wonder if this has ties to hanging chads.
Right. Well, in fact, it's a hell of a lot more obvious than the hanging chads. It's really extremely clear when people write somebody's name in, which is so much more effort than you have to go to vote, that you intend to vote for that person.
What was your feeling when you received a call from him?
I felt that, well, actually it was a message, so I didn't talk to him. I just came home and the message was there. I felt that he had kicked me in the head and he expected me to slink away. And there was no way I was going to do that, because I had been there when they were counting the ballots. We were watching this because we were concerned about all these different problems, and I had seen...
I wonder why.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I had seen how many people had written me in without connecting arrows, and also how many people had written me in for other offices. So I realized that actually I probably got about 3,000 votes, and I felt... I was very moved by the Green voters' desire for me to run for Congress, and I felt...
Well, you must have had other voters, too.
No, it was
the
Green primary.
Wow.
Yeah, it was only Greens.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
So I felt that they had given me this responsibility, and I had to do it, no matter what John Arntz said. So I resolved to find it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We have Kevin here. Kevin, you also had a fight with the Elections Department.
Yeah, I love the way Terry said that the Election Department expects us to slink away when they deliver these incredible rules and ways to eliminate people's votes, because when we were all working on the recall. The recall of Sophie Maxwell. We had to collect approximately 4,000 signatures. And all the way through, the election department had been setting up obstacles for us and changing rules and generally just making it difficult.
How many signatures?
So we turned in 6,000.
How many signatures do you have to have?
4,000.
4,000.
So we turned in 6,000, and after a week or so, we are notified that we were insufficient. And since people have a right to go, well, the advocates, the people who have been signing, are doing the organizational work, get to look at the elections department's conclusion, I went in there to view the petitions and to see why they had disqualified so many, many signatures. And the largest disqualification was 875, which the election department said were not registered. However, I knew that those 875 signatures had affidavit numbers written next to the name, because...
What is an affidavit number?
That is the number you are given when you register to vote. And we had access to voter files, and so when we got a signature, we checked it to make sure the person who signed it was registered, and when we got that number, we wrote it next to the name. And the curious thing was, I had the right to view all these petitions, and I think they were rather astonished that I came to actually do this, because they were very intimidating and formal, and they took me way back in the back of the place where they had it set up in piles on these long, long tables. And they had a worker just stand and watch me the whole time I was there, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know what you really expected me to do. But those 800 signatures, I was not allowed to view. They were withheld from me. I couldn't compare, in the sense that I couldn't compare them to the voter file, which was on the computers. There's a whole lot of computers, as you can imagine. And there's just like banks and banks of people working on them. And so I am simply not allowed to check those out. And the reason was that they didn't have any computer for me to use at that time. And they would only allow me to do this after the November 2nd election.
This is most interesting. Speaking about computers, I heard that there were a couple of databases. Do you want to fill me in on that?
Well, it's kind of hard to fill you in on anything that the department is saying to us, because it's really shifting sands.
Wasn't there a July database?
Yes. The one we were giving was March, and it was very difficult to get an updated one. And we had to struggle and fight for the July, when we were in July, in order to get to view it. And they were saying that the only way we could really use the July one is if we went down to the elections department and used their computer that they set up for public use. There's two of them down there. So while people were finding as much as they could on these old CDs, the old voter files that were March 2004, I would take what was left over down to City Hall and check on the database down there. And I found about a third more registered voters than the people, you know, who were using the CD back home could find. So, but in addition to that, there were these weird things happening, like an elderly lady who has been voting for 25 years we could not find her on the database. And the closest we could come was her first name and her correct address, but she was African American and the last name was Chinese. So, accuracy is not, I don't think, a really strong quality of the department.
Well, we've seen the grand jury reports on the elections department, and that's not a shining example of how a modern, computerized city like San Francisco, aren't we known for our high-tech resources?
If the city of San Francisco is known for that. I think, for one thing, it is, I think you start off with, it is very complex to run elections and do these kinds of things. And then, if you don't have a passionate commitment to doing it well, which I don't think the city has.
Terry, did you say a passionate commitment?
Yeah.
Or did you mean a political commitment? Because isn't there some semblance of a political commitment out of the elections department from what we've read in the past?
Right. There's all kinds of implications of political manipulations and hanky-panky. And sometimes I just feel like we live in a little southern town where the sheriff and the judge and the mayor all have the same last name, you know? Although maybe that's insulting to those little foreign, little southern towns. They might be, you know, like San Mateo doesn't have any of the nonsense that we have.
Right.
The county of San Mateo just runs their elections and that's that. And there's, what is it, so there's something called, I don't know whether it's intentional incompetence, I wish I could remember the phrase, but it's that it's pretty clear that the Department of Elections is incompetent. Now, one of the reasons that it is that it really isn't given enough resources to do the job well.
Terry, you're a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, well, it's incompetence, it's this, it's that.
Well, that's part of it. It's a big part of it. But the point is, it's a lot easier to manipulate an organization that is incompetent.
Right.
It's a lot easier to do political funny business if the DOE is starting off being incompetent.
Okay, then let me run a question by Kevin. You're familiar with the Voting Rights Act?
Yeah.
It's at the heart of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
It gives people of color the right to vote. How many people of color are in your district?
Well, the district, I don't know exactly. I would have to do a little math in my head, but there's like 35,000 people. Oh, I'm sorry, and District 10 is quite large. What I always think of is Bayview Hunters Point.
Well, I would think then on... The district is predominantly people of color.
Not the district, but Bayview Hunters Point.
Okay.
Which is 35,000 registered voters.
35,000 population, I would say.
Population.
Right.
Okay.
So I would guess that you have a predominance of people of color.
Right,
you know?
And they were the ones who worked so very, very hard collecting signatures for the recall. I mean, the motivation from it came straight out of Hunters Point. I mean, we had a huge eye-opener when we tried to solicit the allies from Petrel Hill, which is the other half of our district. They were hostile. They did a political smear campaign on us that was in the Bay Guardian. And so the vast, vast majority of our signatures came from Bayview Hunters Point and Sunnydale.
Then let me ask a question of you. If you have this large representation of people, it's my understanding that you ran into a surprise on the recall, that if the recall was successful or the ballots were counted accurately, what would take place?
Actually, there were many, many, many surprises, but that was sort of like the clincher. When we turned in our signatures, on our signature sheet, it actually says that we demand the right to elect a replacement should our recall succeed. On the day that we turned in 6,000 signatures, John Arntz tells us that the rules of the city are not like the state, and that the mayor would now replace our supervisor should our signature campaign succeed. And the truth is, it did succeed. We do have sufficiency. There's four or five ways that they eliminated signatures, and some of them very much are like the literacy issue.
I guess the question I'm getting to is the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
If the Voting Rights Act is to help guarantee the civil rights of people of color,
exactly,
what takes precedent? What the city is doing, or what the Voting Rights Act is stating?
Well, we believe that the Voting Rights Act and legally, a recall election of this nature should be just what it says and what it is on the state level for the governor. And they, in researching, they say it comes from the city charter, and the city charter takes precedent over the state. But the city charter sentence by which they are basing their conclusion that the mayor would appoint a replacement is not even in the section of the city charter that has to do with elections. You have to go other places in the city charter to find that reason, and it comes under a replacement caused by death or a person resigning. Mm-hmm. It's not connected to elections at all. In that case, the mayor would step in and appoint a replacement until the next election. Right, but it's not connected to elections at all. That clause about the mayor replacing one.
Most interesting, since we're talking about legal issues and federal issues, Terry.
Well, it's, what Kevin's experienced is what I've experienced is that the law is whatever the person in charge says the law is.
Exactly.
It's a really amazing thing when you actually experience it. It really doesn't matter what the law, a perfect example is after I experienced being shut out of the being on the ballot. My next strategy was what they call administrative relief, which was the Board of Supervisors has to certify the results of the election, of all the elections that take place in San Francisco, in order for it to go to the Secretary of State. Okay, so it's kind of an automatic thing. They just vote to certify everything. So we decided we would go to the supervisors and lobby them to refuse to certify everybody's election until I was put on the ballot. And so for a couple of weeks, I was going around to all the different supervisors and talking to their aides and talking to the supervisors themselves and trying to convince them that I should be on the ballot. And I found most of them extremely open and sympathetic, because when you show somebody this ballot with my name written in and the arrow not connected, and you show it to people and you say, this was not voted, this was not counted as a vote for me, people feel it's unfair. So I was doing a very good job of convincing supervisors, including ones that were considered that progressive. In other words, people were responding to this not as a partisan issue, but as an issue about democracy and voting rights. And so that was very exciting, because I thought, wow, I'm going to get this great coup, have this great public debate about this issue. And then the city attorney came through with an opinion, and the city attorney was also the one that said that my 229 votes should be thrown out in the first place, okay? So the city attorney came through with an opinion that said that the Board of Supervisors only was certifying the elections of city people, not any federal or state elections. Now, and therefore, this vote to certify didn't involve me at all, and there was nothing I could do to stop it.
Yes.
And anyhow, that isn't true.
Sure.
It simply isn't true, but the city attorney said it, and all the supervisors accepted it as true. Now, they could have said, wait a minute,
Is this the only interpretation of this?
Sure.
But they didn't. They all accepted that. I guess probably they wanted, even though they were sympathetic, it was a, would have been a big deal for them to refuse to vote to certify. So I guess they were all relieved to get rid of that conflict. And so, therefore, this whole strategy that I had sort of fizzled into nothing, because the city attorney...
How did you feel then?
Well, at that point, I did a sit-in at the Department of Elections.
Oh, I did read about
arrested.
That. You were arrested, yes.
Yeah, right, yeah. That was the point. Yeah, but it was very clear that I wasn't going to be able to get anything from the Board of Supervisors. Well, you know, it's all...
Wait a minute. You were arrested for fighting for your rights.
I was arrested fighting for my right to speak to John Ernst. He refused to meet with me.
And this is the director of the Elections Department.
Yeah, I said, initially when this whole thing happened, I said, I want to meet with you. I am my lawyer. I want to meet with you. He said, no, I won't. So,
sounds like a very good public citizen.
But anyhow, it also, and I know Kevin has had this experience too, it's fascinating just to find out what the system is really like. It is really fascinating to find out how malleable the law is.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'd like to bring something in. I was given a note, 74% people of color, 26% white, District 10. And that came from the local newspaper editor, SF Bayview. I wanted to ask another question. While we're on this subject, media coverage. Did you get any Chronicle coverage?
Well, you know what? It's like if you're a Green, it's just almost impossible to get coverage by the Chronicle. However, I was having a press conference outside the Superior Court. I can't remember what phase we were going through at that point. And my sister's friend walked by, and she said, "Terry, what are you doing here?" And she was the legal reporter at the Chronicle.
Interesting.
And I tried to contact her earlier, but I'll tell you, when you're doing everything...
The reason why I'm asking this question, I don't know if you noticed that there's been cutbacks at the Chronicle. 10% its management and staff. And one of the things that we feel is vitally important, and one of the reasons why you guys are here, is to have a voice.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there would be no voice. And these are important issues for a city and for a community for this stuff to be out there. Your case is at the Supreme Court, is it not?
No, it's at the United States Supreme Court.
United States Supreme Court. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, let me just clarify. The reason I got covered in the Chronicle was that the legal reporter was a personal friend of my sister's, and therefore she was open to actually looking at the case. And unfortunately, she was transferred to something else. She's no longer doing legal reporting, but it deserved to get covered. But that was how I was able to get attention, was through a personal connection. Now, the Supreme Court has taken my case.
Do you want to explain how that happened?
Well, we got denied at the Superior Court, then we appealed, we were summarily dismissed there, which really feels like being kicked in the face. We were summarily dismissed. Then we were denied at the California Supreme level, and we appealed to the federal level, and which everybody thought was very foolish, but my campaign manager really wanted to do it. I said, okay, let's go all the way. But all of this is a diversion from campaigning, of course.
Sure. Of course.
And so the Supremes, we are one of the 5% of the cases that apply to them that are taken up. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, it was a validation that this issue was really important.
Does it call civil rights?
Voting rights. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we were hoping that the Supremes would issue a stay, which would mean that before they made a decision on my case, they would order the city to reprint ballots with my name on them in case they decided that I was entitled to be on the ballot. And we're now at one of those political or legal snafus where the interpretations of the law and this California jurisdiction, I mean, this is really arcane and complicated. We're just kind of stuck and nothing's happening. And basically the clerk that we're dealing with is demanding that we give them some kind of certification from the California Supreme Court that the California Supreme Court doesn't give. Now, you would think that the federal court and the Supreme Court of the largest state in the union would have clarified all these issues a long time ago, but we're not getting, nothing's going to happen, and it's just not. The time is wasting, and it doesn't seem that the Supreme Court is going to order the ballots reprinted.
God forbid if we should get clarification on voting rights rapidly.
Yeah, yeah.
With all of the things that are taking place on a national basis.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, that could set precedents and set things way back.
Yeah.
Kevin. Mr. Arntz.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to speak to him either. He was like the man behind the curtain for the longest time.
Who does he work for?
Well, us, I suppose. He's an appointed director.
City of San Francisco.
He's actually, according to the charter, he's appointed by the San Francisco Elections Commission, who are supposed to be citizens representing us.
Well, let's just call him the mysterious Mr. Arntz at this point.
Actually, when I finally did meet him, which was at an election commission meeting, I was, he's a real human being, and he was very nice in his own way. However, he did get kind of defensive at the commission meetings because it really became clear that his methods of eliminating so many signatures were illegal, basically. And so he just didn't like, for example, you're not supposed to invalidate a signature if a person has moved within the district. There were 474 signatures invalidated because someone moved around the block. And you know, in Bellevue Hunters Point, well, the lower the economic situation is for people, the more frequently they move. And you're not supposed to disqualify a person as long as they still remain in the district where they were registered. But they were all eliminated for that reason. And Mr. Arntz said, now, we tried to be really, really careful not to do that sort of thing. But actually, I was holding the paper where he, you know, where it was printed out that that's exactly what he did. And other little, it's like the department went out of their way to find minor flaws that they could invalidate a signature, out of their way. And so that's why our recall was not successful, not because we did not have enough signatures, because we did.
There's been some problems in the past in purging the voter rolls.
Right.
And wasn't there some just recent information on purging?
Yes. I was trying to get that printed out to refresh my memory, which isn't very good. But in fact, it's like pages and pages, and actually the rules for voting are really pretty simple, and if they were kept that way, a lot more people could vote, and their vote would be counted. So there's these myths that govern things. Like, apparently, John thought that it was really okay to eliminate someone if they moved around the corner. And it wasn't until I read that information that Mary Radcliffe of the Bayview paper actually got sent out to us, where I saw that that is absolutely wrong. It's clear. It's on black and white. You don't do that.
Okay.
But it was done.
It sounds like, with the elections department, there are things that take place that are either politically motivated or, at best, incompetent or, at a minimum, untrained in their understanding of the law. You know, I look back at some of the things that were written up about the elections department and some of the serious things. The 49ers Stadium Mall, if you all remember that. Vote early, vote often. We know some of the participants that were involved in that. There was ballot boxes moved without security there, etc. Well, on one hand, I'm hearing the dotting of the I's, the crossing of the T's, and if you don't capitalize a letter properly, or if you don't draw this line, or if you happen to move around the corner, you get dismissed and disqualified. But what about the major stuff that goes on with these? And these are major things. But what's it all about? Do you guys have any answers?
I think it's about politics and power, and people in power want to keep it, and because they have the power, they get to make things a little, do things behind the curtain. And I think it's really like Terry, you know, I went into this assuming that there were rules and people generally wanted to, like, keep a clear structure. You know, they had an obligation to do that. That's what they get paid for. But then what you get inside, it's like all this structure is like stage furniture or something. Because
I did hear something about when you were verifying signatures at the elections department, they put you into a very uncomfortable position. Would you explain that?
It's like you wouldn't want to do this very long is basically what the message is. But they had two computers. One computer sat on a shelf with a flat front. And you had to scoot your chair up and sit sideways to view.
So it wasn't, it didn't have an opening like a desk?
No. Then there was another place that actually did have an opening. The table was so small that there was only room for the computer and a mouse pad. So you had to sit sideways there, too, in order to look at your papers, your clipboard, and to be able to write. You had to write on your knee.
Wait a minute. This is the city of San Francisco, County of San Francisco. And you're saying, because I presume you're looking at more than 1 or 10 or 20 or 100 or a couple hundred or maybe 1,000 or 2,000, and they're trying to make it as uncomfortable as possible.
Right.
I'm getting a picture here.
They want you to slink away, right?
Yeah. No, they do.
They really think they're going to get you to slink away.
Yeah. It's very frustrating. We've had a machine, a very powerful machine, for a long time, really entrenched. It's a messiah of a hydra-headed beast. You chop off one head and another head swoops up, you know? But, you know, I don't want people to feel discouraged. The problem with talking about these problems is that I worry that people just feel like, oh, they're all a bunch of crooks, forget about it.
No, I think there is actually accountability coming into place. I'm looking at some of the stuff that's taking place in Sacramento, and we've had a very famous person in San Francisco, Miss Julie Lee.
That's right.
And she seems to have been affecting things potentially not only on a local level, but on a state level.
Right.
So
that's right. Well, you know what? I think that this is how I feel. You know, there is all kinds of political manipulation, and it's just outrageous to give people who come to check signatures, who are dedicated citizens, a physical situation that makes it too uncomfortable for them to do it, you know? And I mean, it's such a tedious thing to do. But I really, on a deeper, broader level, I feel that democracy is something that we are working towards. It is not something that we have, and it's a goal that we need to have, and we need to understand that it's not that easy. I don't think, frankly, democracy is human nature, you know, to be democratic. It's human nature in a certain way to do the kinds of things that people are doing once they have power, to manipulate the whole situation, keep the power. So what we're talking about is kind of a higher level of consciousness. Democracy demands us to become
higher beings, more enlightened. And it's something that we need to struggle towards.
I tend to agree with you. I look at the current elections. I look at William Churchill and his statement, the only thing that we have to fear is fear itself. And what seems to be the theme of this election? Fear.
Fear and God.
Fear.
Incredible.
And, you know, we look at people that are struggling. You know, you got high energy prices. Gas. San Francisco. You know, that affects everything. Oil went up to $2.55 something a barrel. Okay, wait till the first time it gets cold. Natural gas went up. We take a look at all these things. Yet and still, we hear politicians talking about terrorism. Well, I think of terrorism in another form. If people don't have money, and people don't have rights.
Right, yeah.
Because there are a lot of people that are homeless out there. They live in terror every day of their lives. And when I see them fighting for representation, and Kevin knows I'm somewhat familiar with District 10, a lot of people were abused trying to vote. Their lives were threatened, in some cases assaulted.
You're talking about in the mayor's election?
Yes.
No. Yeah, it's terrible.
And we're a modern city.
Right.
You know, and I'm looking at the other end of it. Here are these people fight on that end to get registered, to vote sort of stuff is going on, vote sort of stuff is going on at the department.
Right.
And you're having to fight for your rights.
Oh, yeah. It's so, and the incredible racism of tolerating the intimidation of voters and those poor people who worked for SLUG, almost, I think all of them were African Americans,
right,
who were forced to vote for Gavin Newsom in order to keep their jobs and were forced to volunteer for Gavin Newsom. I mean, there is a tremendous racial component in this abuse, although it isn't just African Americans and people of color who are suffering, but there, but on top of that, there's this, and of course what happened in Florida, that was so horrible, and what you saw, to me, did you see Fahrenheit 9/11?
Yes.
Okay, to me, by far the most shocking scene in that was the scene in the Senate, where all the members of the Black Congressional Caucus protested in the Senate against the certifying of the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, they were called out of order because they each, you needed, apparently you can file a protest against the certifying of the election if you have one senator who will co-sign your protest, and not one senator would do it. Not one, not Ted Kennedy, not Paula Wellstone, not Barbara Boxer, nobody. And you got one African-American after another standing up there starting to talk about the disenfranchisement of Black people in Florida. And here's Gore, he's banging down the gavel, calling them out of order. It's his election. It was so shocking to me, and the racism of it all was so overpowering that there was, at this point, there's not one African-American senator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hopefully Obama will be elected, but at this point, there was nobody.
Sure.
Who, in other words, somehow for Caucasians, it's somehow acceptable at the end of the day that Black people are deprived of their voting rights.
Sure. Kevin, what is your feeling at this stage?
Well, I'm really perk up when I listen to Terry described the task of creating democracy, because that's really true. I mean, I have to remind myself of this, because it's pretty discouraging. In our neighborhood, it's so difficult to get any kind of political stuff. Today, actually, there's a presentation at City Hall before the Board of Supervisors pertaining to the civil grand jury's report on education in Bayview Hunters Point. And that's just one major thing. I mean, it's so major. Every single day,
African-American children are dislocated from their community in order to go to school. They are sent out of their district because their neighborhood has very few decent schools. And the whole infrastructure for education in Bayview Hunters Point has just been allowed to disintegrate.
How about health?
Same thing. The health issues in our neighborhood are outrageous, and the clinic situation is part-time. Instead of having full-time open clinic, no, you have to make an appointment. You have to show up at certain times. It's discouraging. And, there's so many dedicated activists, African-American activists, that show up at City Hall and advocate for our neighborhood. And it's, now that we have district elections, it's like we really thought that we'd really have some power, but it hasn't turned out that way at all. And after trying all other avenues to get some attention around life and death issues, basically, that's what it's about. When you have children dying in childcare from asthma attacks, it's not trivial. When the education system is just completely in shambles in our neighborhood, when we have police carrying weapons and invading a school in riot gear and pulling out weapons and billy clubs in an academic high school in Bayview Hunters Point. When that kind of stuff is going on, it's not about trash. Fathers, brothers, uncles are all locked up in prison. So the youth have no really firm role models to and optimism about growing up and being a respected member of our city, a respected citizen, because they're treated like criminals from day one. And the police demonstrate on the streets in front of the youngest of children how crudely and rudely a youth can be treated by the police. I think things are turning around a little bit now. We had a big fight in order to replace the former police commission. And now that we have a new one, I'm very hopeful that things will change. But it was such a disillusionment not to be able to have the support of our supervisor. More than anything, we thought our supervisor that we elected would really be a voice for this particular community that has always been ignored, but we remain ignored. So this recall was a last-ditch effort. It's not like it's the first thing that came off the top of people's heads.
Sure. I want to do a public service announcement before that. You're listening to Connecting the Dots with Maurice Campbell. This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. This PSA is Showdown at Hunters Point Shipyard. A protest demonstration and press conference will be held on Monday, October 25th, 2004 at 10 a.m. at the Anna B. Walden Library to protest the proposed transfer of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard and the role of the Department of Public Health in promoting the transfer and residential development of lead-contaminated soil at the shipyard. One of the things that we didn't touch on and you didn't touch on there was the environment. You're happy to see that the Chronicle is starting to look at the babies and what's happening with the babies.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to have good elected officials in place. And, you know, Terry, I'm happy you're a fighter, because this is exactly what we need today.
Well,
we don't need people rolling over and accepting the status quo, because every time I hear about Iraq, number of people dying, and what's taking place there, and the violations of rights, I have a question. If this country got invaded, would we not be fighting to the last person?
Of course we would. Of course we would. Yeah, I mean, that is the people who
planned and executed this invasion are war criminals. In fact, Kofi Annan, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said that the invasion of Iraq was illegal. That means the people who carried it out are criminals. And I'm not just interested in withdrawing from Iraq and getting out of there, because that's what happened in Vietnam. I'm 57, so I was involved in that struggle and demonstrating. And we felt that we had achieved total victory just when we got the United States to withdraw. But in fact, the United States never acknowledged that it did anything wrong. Nobody was ever brought to trial for it, and we never paid a dime in war reparations. And we cannot let a similar thing happen again. Yes, we have to get out of there, but we also have to bring those people to trial. Now, you say that's unrealistic, but we have to try to make this happen because it's right and because the same thing will be done again by these people if they think they can get away with it.
That's right.
But you know what? I also feel, to return to Bayview Hunter's point, I think, of course, it is a shame and absolutely wrong that Sophie Maxwell is not dedicating herself to serving that community, which so desperately needs representation. And I feel very strongly, if I'm elected, that I felt that from the very beginning. The people that I'm representing the most are the people from Bayview Hunter's Point and Sunnyvale, because those are the people who need representation the most. But I just want to emphasize that the problem of Bayview Hunter's Point and the things that that Kevin was describing, which are so extreme, in this small city, we're a city of 700,000, but yet Bayview Hunter's Point is like another country almost. These should be the concern of everybody in San Francisco, because it is not just the problem of people who live there to change their environment. It is the problem of everybody in San Francisco to be involved in transforming Bayview Hunter's Point, just as when the Nazis invaded places, it was not just the problem of the Jews to deal with anti-Semitism. It was the problem of everybody to get involved. And I feel that the same thing has to happen in communities of color that have been so trampled down that they've lost really they just are in a permanent state of despair. This is not just their problem, it's all of ours.
That's right. That's,
it was created by the city at large, and it has to be mended by the city and the redevelopment agency and the planning commission. And then that's another whole kettle.
Well,
the fish.
Terry and Kevin, it's coming to that time. I want to thank you both for being here. There are a lot of things that need to happen. There is hope for San Francisco, because when Prop P passed Clean Up the Shipyard to residential standards, there was 287,000 people who voted for it. However, we have seen an absence from the major media covering substantive issues. We've seen an absence of many of our politicians talking about things.
Right.
And if the things are equalized, this is going to be a better city all the way around. Thank you both for being here.
Can I say one last thing? I'm asking for your vote on November 2nd for U.S. Representative. I'm a write-in candidate, Terry Baum, T-E-R-R-Y-B-A-U-M. I'm running against Pelosi because she voted for the Patriot Act and to, quote, unequivocally support the president, unquote, when he invaded Iraq. So please write my name in, and don't forget to connect the arrow next to my name.
And you have a website.
www.terrybaum.com.
Thank you, Terry. Kevin, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.